Welcome to Financial Planning Explained. I'm your host, Mike Menninger, certified financial planner, owner and founder of Menninger & Associates Financial Planning. I'm pleased to be joined with Nick DeVito today. Nick, thank you very much for joining.
Thanks for having me.
Nick is also a certified financial planner and one of the CFPs on my staff. What we're talking about today is talking about tax planning again. It's been a while since we've done this, but then we've come to the realization lately that all of a sudden the current tax laws are set to expire at the end of 2025. These tax laws were put in place by President Trump in 2018, and historically, presidents will generally, if they make tax law changes, they have it land in the middle of a presidential term, which makes sense because no president's capable of really doing anything in their first year.
Yep.
So if you do it at the end of year two, then it gives them the ability if they're going to make changes to the tax laws.
Yep.
The same could be said about the last previous tax law change was set to expire in 2010, which was in the middle of President Obama's term. So this, when they said it, you know, when presidents said it, they have no idea who's going to be president at the time.
Yep, exactly.
So we haven't done these for a few years, and all of a sudden came the realization. We did a presentation at adult education at a local high school, and that was extremely well received.
Yes.
To the point where, like, holy cow, we're down to the final 2 years, let's start attacking it. Now, the reality of the situation is that, you know, here we are after the first of the year, most tax planning can't be done anymore. Okay, most tax planning needs to be done during the course of a year, and with us, our busy season is Q4. Because that's when we're doing tax planning while you still can make changes. Now, there are a couple things that you can do after the first of the year, but not much by then.
I mean, you can make a prior year contribution to your Roth IRA, your traditional IRA,
right.
And there's a few other things.
There's profit sharing, as business owners can do certain things, but
like you said, the big hitters, your 401k contributions, they're by December 31st.
Correct. Correct, as well as Roth conversions and lots of different things. So, you know, getting dividends, capital gains, all that stuff you really need to be doing by the end of the year. But because the tax laws are changing, or at least scheduled to change in 2 years, we figure we will revisit it again because really that leaves only this year and next year at which time that people can take advantage of the tax law changes. So, as always, we're here to try to do the best we can to inform and to provide an educational show. And so what we're going to be talking about is generally the six areas of financial planning. And today we're going to be discussing tax planning or tax management, which is tax planning strategy. So we're going to kick off on that. And this is going to be a multi-part episode. I expect this to be three parts. We just did this with an audience in gave them 2 hours, and actually we took almost two and a half hours.
A little over 2.5.
But we also don't have an audience who's going to be asking us questions and being able to elaborate. I love having an audience because, you know, it provides the opportunity to ask questions and to be able to further elaborate.
Yeah.
So with no further ado, I'll let you kick off. I mean, the taxation of the various different entities.
Yes. So there's a few different entities in which you're going to be taxed. You have your state, which here in Pennsylvania, it's whatever you make, 3.07% of it. And you have your local income tax that's usually around 1%, depends on the county. Then you have your Social Security, which is 6.2%. And now that there is a cap to that. It is capped at $168,000 of income.
Right.
Then you have your Medicare, which is 1.45%, which there's no cap on that.
Right.
And then you have federal, which ranges anywhere from 0 to 37%. And that's what we're going to be primarily discussing today.
Right, because you have the ability to manipulate that.
Exactly. With the state, local, Social Security, and Medicare, you really can't do much about
that.
It just kind of is what it is. Federal, you have some options.
That's correct.
To work with.
That's correct. And that's why we're going to spend the most time talking about that, because you can't really manipulate any of the other taxes. Now, one thing to point out that's unique about Social Security, the two pieces of Social Security is the OASDI, which is the old age survivor, is that is also matched by the employer. So anybody who is working and pays 6.2% as well as the 1.45, the employer also has to match that.
Yep.
So in fact, it's 15.3% that's going into the system. And if you're self-employed, guess what? You're the employer and the employee, which means you're bellying up the entire 15.3%.
Yep.
So talk about the budget. Did you want to talk about that, or you want me to
talk
about it?
Yeah, sure. So on the screen here, we just have the federal budget. And what you'll notice is that we're operating with a massive deficit. I mean, there's a few ways in which the government generates income, and the primary way is through taxes. So over time, the government has demonstrated that they're not looking to spend less. I don't know if you could agree with that statement,
sure.
Mike.
It's not that they're looking to spend less. They're not capable of spending less. They always find ways of spending more.
Yep. So we like to equate it to, so you're already in debt. Say you already have $10,000 on a credit card. Your cost of living is $20,000, but you're only bringing in $10,000. So what's the big deal? Might as well just throw the extra $10,000 on the credit card. What could possibly go wrong?
Exactly.
That's kind of what we're looking at right now. So to get out of this situation, the government can either tax more or spend less.
Right, and they're incapable of spending less. In fact, if you take a look at it, now mind you, this is the 23 budget, which they haven't even come up with the 24 yet because they can't agree in Congress. That's a separate issue. However, what you see here is that they're spending $6 trillion and bringing in $5 trillion. So they're taking that extra trillion and just slapping it into new debt. We're up to over $34 trillion in debt right now. So if they don't do something about that, that is going to be a runaway train. And in fact, you think they'd do something about it, but Congress is aware of it. And a lot of economists are aware of it, in that there comes a point where we're going to have so much debt in this country that we're not even going to be able to pay it down or pay it back. And that is a serious problem. So the next slide we're going to talk about is the buckets.
Yep. Yeah, we like to call these our investment buckets. So essentially, there's three time horizons in which the government looks at your investments. So you have when you're contributing, as it's going along, and when you take it out. And I would say the first bucket that people are most familiar with is your traditional IRA, your 401k, pensions, SEP IRAs. When you make a contribution to your 401, your traditional 401k, you get a tax deduction for it. So for example, if you make $50,000, you contribute $10,000 to your 401k, your traditional 401k, at the end of the year, you're gonna get a W-2 that says you made $40,000. But over time, as it goes from 10 to 20 to 30 to 40, you're not paying any taxes on that. Now, you are gonna pay taxes when you're in retirement and you're pulling that money out. So when you pull money out of your traditional 401k or IRA, it is 100% taxable to you as ordinary income.
And we're going to talk more about the difference of ordinary income and how that comes into play. And we're going to talk more about that later on.
Yep. It's very much a pay me now, pay me later situation. So you're getting the tax deduction up front, you're paying the taxes on the back.
Correct.
Then you have this second bucket, which is your savings account, CDs, stocks, bonds, real estate. So when you're contributing money to your when you put money in your bank account, you're not getting a tax deduction for it. But as it's going along, if your bank account's spitting out interest, your investment account's spitting out dividends, you have some capital gains, interest, you're gonna pay tax on the year in which you accrued it, which
right.
We kind of touched on
earlier. All along the way.
Can't control that as much. Now, when you take that money out, so you sell the investment, for example, you're not gonna pay tax on the basis. So if you bought stock for $10,000, it grew to $15,000, and you go and sell it, you're only paying tax on that $5,000,
right.
Which is what's referred to as a capital gain. Now, the main difference between a long-term and short-term capital gain is the period of time which you've held it for. Long-term capital gain is a year and a day. And long-term capital gains will qualify for preferential tax treatment. So it is a long-term capital gain is always going to be at a more favorable tax bracket than your ordinary income.
Correct. And this bucket we refer to in our industry is non-qualified.
Yep.
It does not qualify for any special tax advantages. Or the special tax advantages apply to giving you tax deferral, et cetera, and those are for your retirement accounts. So non-qualified, also non-retirement, but that's what's referred to in our industry.
Yep. Then we have this third bucket, which is your non-qualified annuities, non-deductible IRAs, after-tax 401ks. Generally speaking, these are really only for certain individuals.
Right.
I wouldn't say this is as broad-based as some of the others. Really only certain situations where you want to utilize these type of accounts. So the way these work is when you contribute to them, you're not getting a tax deduction. As it's going along and it's growing, it's tax deferred, similar to the traditional 401k in that sense. And then when you take it out, it is the gains only are taxable as ordinary income. So whereas the last bucket, the non-qualified bucket, your gains can be capital, you could get capital gains for the preferential tax treatment, you're not getting that benefit in the second bucket.
Right, Exactly. Exactly. And they're also taxed slightly different in dependent on whether it's inside the 401k or whether it's a non-qualified annuity or if it's a non-deductible IRA.
Yep.
With a non-deductible IRA, let's say you put $10,000 in and it grew to 12. If you wanted to take 2,000 out, what happens is that it's 2/12 of it is taxable.
It's proportionate.
Correct. It's proportional. It's pro rata. Yep. Whereas if it was in a non-qualified annuity, then what happens is that it's what was referred to as LIFO, last in, first out.
Yep.
So if you have a $15,000, you put $10,000 into an annuity and then it grew to 15, if you wanted to take 2,000 out, you're skimming off the top. The entire $2,000 is taxable as ordinary income, and you don't even get to the tax-free portion until you've burned through all of the taxable amount. Those are the ones that I don't like, all right? The reason why I don't like them is that I've come across in my career someone who put $100,000 in it, and next thing I know, it's over $350,000. They could not access that $100,000 until they burned through all of that other amount taxed as ordinary income. And then on top of it, because they're getting tax deferral, they have the penalty for early withdrawal prior to age 59 and a half.
Exactly. Yep, so then we have this fourth and final bucket. So this is the Roth IRAs, Roth 401ks, 529s. So with this bucket, you're not getting the tax deduction on the way in. So in that same example we used earlier, if you make $50,000, you contribute $10,000 to your Roth 401k. At the end of the year, you're getting a W-2 that says you made $50,000.
Right.
You didn't get the tax deduction for it. But just as the traditional IRA and 401k, it grows tax deferred. So your 10 grows to 20, 30, 40. You're not paying tax on it when it grows. But when you take it out down the line in retirement, it comes out in two beautiful words, tax-free.
Absolutely.
So that's just kind of looking at, you know, the different types of the time frames, the different types of accounts you can use. And I know we get often asked, you know, when should I go traditional or when should I go
Roth?
Which is better
for me, right? Which one should I do?
And the answer is
it depends.
It depends.
We get that question all the time.
Yep. And generally speaking, when you're looking at that, it's, are you going to be in a higher income tax bracket now or later? Because why would you take the income tax deduction now if you're in a lower tax bracket than you will be later?
And then pay a higher tax on it later.
Exactly.
That's silly.
Yep.
And so that's what the whole gig is to whether or not, you know, you have to take a look at what your tax bracket is today, which is very easy to figure out. But then you have to project what might my tax bracket be later, which is always a crapshoot. However, I think we can all reasonably believe that the income tax brackets aren't going to go down from here. So if you take a look at the final bucket there, there is the Roth IRA and the Roth 401k. We're leaving 529 plans alone. They behave in the same manner, but they're used specifically for college or now for regular K through 12. You're allowed to use up to $10,000. We're not gonna talk about cash value insurance. That's a long, long conversation in its own. But to the point is there's only three ways of getting money into that bucket, either through the Roth 401k,
mm-hmm.
which means you have to be working,
yep.
and you have to have a 401k that allows it.
Yep, exactly.
A Roth IRA, which you have to have income.
Yep.
And therefore, you have to be working.
Yep.
Okay, because if you have no income, you can't contribute to the Roth IRA, and you can't contribute to the Roth 401k.
Yep.
But there's a third way of getting money into the bucket, and let me show you what that is. That is, if you take money from, and it's not working, let's get it to work. You could take money from this bucket, move it into this bucket, and you pay tax now, and then it grows tax-free in the Roth bucket for the rest of your life. That is what is referred to as a Roth conversion.
Yep.
Okay? Roth conversions are, once again, taking a peek at what you anticipate your tax bracket will be later compared to what it is today. And we've had several episodes on this topic all by itself. And, you know, what we've demonstrated is, you know, don't be surprised if you're in a higher income tax bracket in retirement. And, you know, that goes against conventional wisdom and conventional thinking. You know, you think I'm making $200,000 today or a household income's $300,000. There's no way in the world I am going to be in a lower tax bracket in retirement, because in retirement, I'm not making any money, right?
Yeah.
So you must be in a lower tax bracket.
That's what you'd think.
That's what you'd think. And we're going to talk more about that. So what I'd like to do is I would like to take a break right here. When we come back from our break, what we're going to do is we're going to talk about the history of the tax brackets. And then from there, we're going to talk about how the tax system works. So stay tuned. We'll be back with you in just a few moments.
Do you keep up regularly with your investments? Where exactly are your hard-earned dollars going? Are you financially prepared for an emergency?
I'm Mike Menninger, founder of Menninger & Associates Financial Planning. We believe that education and knowledge are powerful, and we want our clients to understand why we are making the recommendations that we make. It's your money, and you deserve to know where it's going, because it's not how much you make, it's how much you keep. So call us today to discuss your financial concerns. Welcome back to Financial Plan and Explain, and I'm your host, Mike Menninger, here again with Nick DeVito, picking up with the presentation on tax planning. And most notably, we talked about in the first segment, we were kind of talking about the history of the taxes, not as much the history of the tax bracket, we're going to talk about that next, but what we're talking about is, you know, what we're going to be talking about, the different levels of taxation and the Fed being the highest and the most manipulatable, if that's a word. If it's not a word, I just create it and add it to Webster's. But what we're going to talk about now is the history of the tax brackets, and then we're going to go in and talk about how the taxes work in a very simplistic manner. So I'm going to kick it to you for the history of the tax brackets now, which are up on the screen.
Yep. So as you see, we only are showing the married tax brackets just for illustration purposes. And you can kind of ignore anything prior to the 1988 brackets, which was derived from the 86 tax code, just because in 88, that's when the modern tax brackets really kind of originated. So what you see is in 88, they had the 15 and the 28% tax bracket. And they're kind of going along, and they're looking, and I said, time out. Does it make sense that someone that's making $100,000 is in the same tax bracket as someone that's making $1 million? No. So what they did is they kept the 15 and the 28, and then they added in that 31.
Right.
And then once again, they're looking at it, and they said, does it really make sense someone that's making $150,000 is in the same tax bracket that someone making $1 million? So they went back to the drawing board yet again. They have the 15, 28, 31, 36, and then 39.6.
Right, they added those two more tax brackets once the married couple got to be making about 130, 140
grand. Exactly. And for what it's worth, this was during the Clinton years.
Right.
This was the last time that we actually had a balanced budget. Just
maybe because they weren't spending
so much. Yeah, they might not have been spending as much.
But that's a separate issue. But yeah, it's the last time we've had a balanced budget.
Yep.
We're bringing in enough money to pay our expenses.
Exactly. We kind of referenced that earlier in terms of the deficit that we've been kind of building on each year. So then in 2001, Bush was in office. The economy was slowing down a little bit. 9/11 occurred. So Bush came in, slashed the tax brackets a little bit. So he snuck in a 10 in there. He has the 15, the 25, 28, 33, 35, and 39.6. And for all these years, people are saying there is no way we can go any lower than this. It's unsustainable. We're beginning to accrue debt.
Right.
And then in 2018, Trump comes in.
Makes a liar out of me. I was preaching. I've been teaching taxes since 2003. And for 15 years, I was preaching, these are the lowest income tax brackets we've ever been in. They can only go one direction.
Yep.
And again, 2018, Trump made a liar out of me. The reality of the situation is, you know, and this is a political statement, but it's not a political statement. By the book, Democrats believe, the Democratic Party, Democrats, I don't care where you go, is they believe that tax more government, and that provides for a better economy. Whereas the Republicans believe tax less, that stimulates the economy through business, which generates more taxes, textbook one way versus the other. So in the late 90s, that was under President Clinton, who's Democrat, they raised the taxes. Once again, the last time we've had a balanced budget. President Bush, as you know, was Republican, and what they were trying to do is to lower the taxes based, again, on a different philosophy. But of course, it didn't help that we were going right into, actually, if you look at the 2001 tax laws, they were really set to start in 2003. And they were supposed to go 2001, 2000, 2002, and 3. They were supposed to slowly slide up. But what they did is they expedited it and just made them all start in 2001.
And understandably so. It made sense given the current economy, 9/11.
Right, there was a lot absolutely. Going on. Well, we were in a pretty nasty recession between 2000 and 2002. And again, you know, 9/11 certainly didn't help matters.
Yep, exactly. So once again, Trump came in and he slashed the tax brackets further. So the 10 remained the same. The 15 became the 12. The 25 became the 24. 22. Sorry, 22. And then he snuck in the 28 became the 24, and he stretched it all the way up. So these numbers are a little dated, but in 2024, a married couple can be making roughly $400,000 before they even break into that 32%
tax bracket.
Right, and
that's where you are right here. This is about $400,000, not taxable income, but $400,000 in income. And you've got a married couple who still is remaining in the 24% income tax bracket. Yet, prior to the Trump tax law changes, that person was hitting the 25% tax bracket only by hitting at about 100,000. So it's kind of weird. It's like you're making $300,000 to $350,000 and your marginal tax bracket's 24%. Yet a couple years ago, you're making 100,000 and you're in a 25% tax bracket.
Yeah, and just to kind of reiterate something we talked about earlier, the current tax laws that we're in right now, they're set to expire at the end of 2025. And if nothing is done, it'll revert back to the previous tax law.
Which are the tax laws that were from 2001 to 2017.
That doesn't mean it's necessarily going to go that way. Right. Whoever's in office at the time they have a few options. They can choose to extend them down the road. They can choose to let them expire. Or they could make their own tax laws.
Correct.
So it's not necessarily set in stone. It's 100% going to be revert back to old ones, but if nothing is done, it will.
Right, and so that's what happened in 2010. So when President Bush's tax laws, when he wrote the new tax laws in 2001, he set for them to expire in 2010, which was in the middle of a presidential period, as we talked about. And what happened is, right at the very end, President Obama said, you know what, we'll leave them go. We'll let them stay as they were. In fact, 2012 came rolling around, he said, I'm going to extend them 2 more years. 2012 came rolling around, he said, let's extend them even further. And so that's what happened until President Trump actually implemented the new tax laws, but also made other changes to the program, which I remember vividly in May of 2017. I was looking at the new tax law changes. I'm like, this is going to have an impact that a lot of people aren't going to recognize, which we'll talk about in a little bit.
Yep.
So, good enough for that? Any more to add?
No, I think that covers
everything.
All right, cool.
So here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a look at, I think everybody recognizes this. All right, so what we did is we took the 1040, kind of slapped it. You don't have to look at it and you don't have to read it, but I think it just makes you quiver just looking at it.
Yeah, it's more so take a mental note. Think about what this looks like.
Exactly.
The headache, all the different lines.
Exactly, and so basically what this is the two-page tax return. Now, it's kind of funny. They have the 1040 SR. It's for seniors.
Yep.
If you're over 65, it's 3 pages. Why is it 3 pages? Is it because it's longer?
Nope. Bigger font.
It's bigger font. For those people over 65 who struggle reading, it's now bigger that they can see. Little tidbit of information, right? So what I did in 2003, and I like to say to people, see this right here? Because I pulled all my hair out trying to figure it out. But let me show you something. This is what I did in 2003 as I was about to get ready and do sort of my tour, so to speak, by saying, holy cow, look at how low these taxes are. I did a tour. I was basically going out and teaching taxes in 2003. And what I did is I took the 1040, which you can see is a lot of noise. All these things. On page 1, page 2, and you got Schedule A, you got Schedule B, you got Schedule D, you got all of the other garbage. And what I did is I said, hey, look at this. What I did is I took all of that 1040 and said, hey, guess what? Look at this right here. This piece that's on the left-hand side of the screen, I basically said, this is your 1040. And I always like to preface and say, all right, which one looks easier? Duh.
No.
Okay. And you know why it looks easier? Because gosh darn it, it is this easy, okay? So what they did is I simplified the tax laws and said in so many words, and I'm gonna blow it up even more, and say basically what you have here is you have your earned income. Well, that's your W-2 income, right? So if you earned $100,000 and you get a W-2 that says $100,000, boom, it shows up there. And if your spouse earns $50,000, boom, it shows up there as earned income. Then we pointed out when we were looking at that the buckets chart, yep, as to the different types of income, what happens here is any interest, dividends, all pop up here, which we separate out. And we're going to do is a little bit later, so we're going to do an example using this. But they add that in, they add in your capital gains and your capital losses. And then what I did is I said other. Why? Because of the fact that there are so many pages of other things, farm income, unemployment income, disability income, K-1 income,
rental property
income, business income, Social Security, IRA, pensions. I'm just going down the list. By the way, Social Security taxable?
Depends.
It depends. Answer to almost every financial planning question, it depends. So then we add that up, and it adds up to this bottom number called adjusted gross income, or AGI. AGI is a magic number because it determines whether or not you're eligible for a variety of different programs. Then below it, what happens is now they give you, how can I make this number smaller for the purpose of taxes? That's when they give you either the standard deduction, or if you can document eligible deductions that exceeds the standard deduction, you take the bigger number, which then becomes your taxable income. And what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna end this episode here. And what we're gonna do is we're gonna pick up on the next episode, we're gonna pick up and dive deeper into how this exactly works from the tax perspective. So Nick, thanks for joining.
Yep, thanks for having me.
We're gonna pick this up.
Absolutely.
In the next episode. Thank you very much for joining us. And I look forward to you seeing you on the next episode for the second part of the tax planning. So thank you for joining in on Financial Planning Explained. I'm your host, Mike Menninger, certified financial planner, here with Nick DeVito, also a certified financial planner. See you next time.